Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it's 2:24 p.m. That's May 11th, and I thought we'd kick off with 10-year Treasury yields. So they're down, and this is the third day in a row they're down, and we're back below the psychological 3% level. So this is meaningful. It's at least a pullback that stands out on the chart, and when we look at it on a weekly basis. Well, we can see that it's certainly accelerated to get up to these levels. And then we should also pay attention to the fact that if the yield pulls back a bit more tomorrow, then we'll be looking at a weekly key reversal. And that's a reasonably meaningful event as well. So, one thing that I've been, and I think most people have been very much attuned to, is the fact that we've had a lot of pressure in stock markets because yields have been rising. There's an acute awareness of how much inflation is rising and how sticky it's become, and that central banks are in a tight position because there's not a lot they can do about it. And obviously, pressuring consumers to kill off demand is only going to create hardship and also initiate a recession. But during recessions, bonds generally tend to do well because inflationary pressures moderate and inflation obviously goes down because economic activity is rather dire. But this isn't a normal set of circumstances. I think what's beginning to happen now is that investors are waking up to the reality that we may move towards a recession, that economic growth is going to slow down, but that commodities are still going to remain in a constrained supply situation. So, what was interesting today is that we've had 3 consecutive days on the downside for yields, and the Nasdaq has not bounced. The Nasdaq was at another new low in here today. This is beginning to price in stagflation. So, if you've got stagflation, you get inflationary pressures, you get very poor growth, or perhaps even negative growth. And then the pain of higher commodity prices really starts to kick in. And what's particularly relevant right now is that Apple is breaking down. So I did a point and figure review of the large tech companies 2 Fridays ago, and Apple was the one that was standing out as the only one that was still in a reasonably consistent upward trend. But it's now breaking downwards. And Apple represents 13% of the Nasdaq 100. So its relative strength has actually helped to support the index, despite the fact that everything else was weak. Apple, being a large component of the index, being quite steady, has been a supportive influence. But it is now breaking downwards. Then Microsoft has also been really quite steady over the last 3 months, but it broke downwards in here as well. So this is 23% of the index when you count those two shares, because Microsoft is 10%. So these are meaningful events because we are talking about a very significant deterioration in two of the largest companies in the world. What was also rather interesting is the largest company in the world now is Saudi Aramco. And the Saudi Arabian stock market is looking like it's putting in a weekly key reversal. Now, that was, of course, on the potential that oil prices might pull back. But oil bounced in here today, and it was up over $4. So this is an upside key day reversal. Now, it's a small one. You really have to take out your magnifying glass to see that it opened at a new low and it's closing at a high above yesterday's high. If we get upside follow-through tomorrow, well, then that would help to confirm near-term support. But the more important point is that this is a wedging characteristic. We have incrementally higher highs excuse me, higher reaction lows and lower highs. And this kind of narrowing breath situation does not last indefinitely. And when it climaxes, the breakout is going to be emphatic. Now, we've seen plenty of examples of these kinds of narrowing breath, wedging type characteristics over the years, and they almost inevitably result in significant appreciation or depreciation. Now, with the $100 level holding and the most recent dynamic being on the upside, we give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. And there is obviously, therefore, the potential that oil is going to break on the upside. And that, of course, will further enhance the argument that we're looking at stagflation. So commodities generally were in positive territory today. And copper has rebounded. Now, it's still below the 200-day moving average, and it's got some work to do. So we may see a reversionary rally, but it absolutely needs to push back above the 440 area to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. Gold prices have also begun to steady from the region of the 200-day moving average and the upper side of the underlying trading range. So they were up $15 in here today, and we do have a short-term oversold condition. In a stagflationary environment, then, with higher commodity prices and low growth, central banks are inhibited from raising interest rates aggressively. Now, if they can't raise interest rates aggressively, then political measures have to be deployed to try and bring prices down. And then that means that there'll be price controls. And the most likely commodities to experience price controls are agricultural commodities. So that's obviously going to be one. And then, of course, gasoline. Now, we've seen some measures discussed, and they've been very slow to be deployed in terms of sending checks to people in California, for example, to help them pay for gasoline, which is an exceptionally short-term solution. The additional measure that's been deployed was to use more ethanol in the blend for gasoline. Now, of course, that is also more polluting, but it was deemed as an acceptable trade-off. And copper and corn prices remain really quite firm and bouncing now from the upper side of the underlying trading range. Wheat prices also steadied in here today. And they obviously still have the strong fundamental tailwind of being the basic food resource for over a billion people, and then obviously also having a significant supply disruption because of the war in Ukraine. But then coffee was also one of the big advancers in the commodity complex in here as well. So it is finding support now from the 200-cent level, the upper side of that range where it had peaked back in 2014 and bouncing from the 200-day moving average. One thing that I think is rather relevant and is probably going to feed through into commodity prices is that Lake Mead in Las Vegas is at a record low. And you have these entertaining media stories about dead bodies turning up, and some of them turning up with their hands tied behind their backs and bullets in their heads. It's all about mafia figures were disposing of bodies in years past. But it's 30% down from lows previously seen, or there's only 30%, the reservoir is at 30% of its full value. And that lake supplies water to all of Las Vegas and a good portion of Southern California as well. So the fact that the drought and the taming of the Colorado River has contributed to this very uncertain water environment in the western USA. And that's more than likely going to contribute to lower yields. Now, we've seen some talk of that in cotton, where there's where farmers are being encouraged not to produce cotton in the Central Valley of California because it's too water intense. And that's, of course, also a significant tailwind for the cotton price, which has really been on a tear over the course of the last 2 years. But then, of course, we have the dollar. And commodity prices have been rallying in spite of the strength of the dollar. Now, investors seem to be very determined to buy the dip. And little wonder, because buying the dip has been by far the most effective strategy for the last 14 years. So they're waiting for any reason to buy the dip. The dollar pulling back would potentially be one of them. But the dollar remains quite firm, because if we are going to move towards stagflation, then that is going to have an upward pressure effect on interest rates. And there will be, obviously, then additional measures to try and curtail deficits. But the challenge with comparing current events to what we saw in the 1970s is that the sheer volume of debt today is multiples of where it was then. So central banks are talking a good game, but how realistic is it that they'll be able to raise interest rates? And if they do have to raise interest rates and really put pressure on the total amount of debt outstanding, are governments going to be willing to raise taxes in order to fund the additional cost of servicing the debt? These are very significant issues, because if we see higher taxes and higher yields, well, then we're going to move into a real recession, and it could be very deep indeed, and that's going to take the dollar with it. But so far, the dollar remains in a consistent uptrend, and it would really need to pull back below 102 to question that. So there's obviously also some willingness to want to buy the dip on the euro. It's been exceptionally inert, and it was in positive territory earlier on today and then wasn't able to hold it. And we're right at the lower side of the range that's been forming now for the last 7 years. So we have a deep oversold condition, but nothing in the way of clear upper dynamics, and there's the potential that we might yet break lower. Then, as if the threat of stagnation wasn't enough, we also then have the fact that property developers in China are now starting to default on their offshore debt. Sunac has defaulted and came to the end of its grace period in here today. Now, the share has been suspended, but it is worth, I think, just looking at the fact that it peaked at 50 and it was suspended when it was at 450. So we've had a profound decline in these property developers already. And the weakest of those companies aren't trading any longer. So when we look at the Hong Kong Property Developers Index, well, it hasn't done nearly as badly, but some of the worst performers are being excised from the index. So we're not getting an accurate depiction of just how difficult it is for these companies, because they're being taken out of the different indices, and these indices are showing a recency bias. Ultimately, China is going to have to stimulate the economy. Now, the number of coronavirus cases is deteriorating in Shanghai, which is good news, and I think they've halved the number of new cases. The problem for China, of course, is that they're permanently exposed to new flare-ups, because they don't have nearly enough people that have been vaccinated. And they have a vast population and a large old population. So this is going to continue to be a difficult scenario. Ultimately, they're going to have to do something to support the property market. but they seem so far to be rather reticent. So we have the H share index, which is attempting to put in a higher reaction low. But it really needs to do more than it has done, and most particularly push back above the 7,500 level. At least if it can do that, it'll have broken the sequence of lower rally highs. That would be, I think, the kind of tradable signal that one could hang one's hat on. But for the moment, it's just too volatile. One thing that I think is also rather relevant here is that the VIX index was in negative territory today, despite the fact that the Nasdaq's breaking downwards again. Now, we can also see that the level of the VIX has been curling around for the last year, and there's a clear sequence of higher reaction lows, and volatility is higher at present than it has been at any point over the last decade on average. So there's certainly the potential that volatility is going to break on the upside, and there's I think that could potentially then result in some of these indices coming all the way back to test their 1,000-day moving averages. Now, the Nasdaq's nearly there already. And the Nasdaq will need to hold the region of the 1,000-day moving average. There hasn't been a point in the last decade when it has sustained a move below it. And we're now right in the region of it. So if... And obviously, there are investors that want to buy the dip. They look at the fact that the market's down 30% and they think, well, what's really changed? These companies that have led on the way upside over the last decade are still fantastic companies doing fantastic things. But it's very hard to grow. Let's think about it this way. Apple has a market cap of $2.3 trillion. What are they going to have to do to get to a market cap of $5 trillion? Now, they're working on an autonomous car. So has Apple solved the autonomy question? And that's a big question. Now, maybe they have. Maybe it is Apple is going to be the company that solves this profoundly difficult AI question. But one thing I can say for sure is that using Siri on an iPhone is exceptionally frustrating. Now, I find that it tends to work better in my car, telling it to call people or to switch between apps, than it does on my phone. But is that enough to sell an Apple car? So these, I think, are really profound questions, because the share is breaking down. And it has a history of pulling back to the region of the 1,000-day moving average. It's done it on multiple occasions in the past. And there have been plenty of times when Apple has fallen by 50%. So I think we have to now begin to consider that that's a very realistic possibility. And Microsoft has also been quite steady, and it's also breaking down. So we're definitely seeing these companies underperforming, and they're likely to take much of the rest of the market with them. But one thing that I think is interesting, and I think we can see this in the best performer on Switzerland today. If we look at Alcon, now they produce eye-related pieces of equipment. They came through with positive earnings, and they surprised on the upside, and they were rewarded by investors. So the share has bounced emphatically from the 1,000-day moving average and the lower side of the range. So it's a reasonably positive development. Then we can think about Unity. Unity is a company that produces software, and it's used by just about every games manufacturer in the world. Now, they had a negative quarter. They basically came out and said they weren't going to be able to sustain their 30% annual growth rate in the second quarter, because they messed up on their data collection software for advertisers and for collecting royalties through the advertising revenue that games make. And by reporting that they're going to have one bad quarter and anticipate that they're going to be fine by the end of this year, the company pulled back by 30% overnight, and it's down 70% in the last 6 weeks. This is a perfect example of how some companies are being rewarded by surprising on the upside and still doing well, and others are going to be heavily punished for one bad quarter. Now, there are plenty of companies out there that don't have earnings and don't have prospects, and they're going to eventually fail. And I've been particularly negative of companies like Peloton, and the share continues to trend downwards. And I really have animus towards Zoom, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if that one goes bust either. But it doesn't mean that every technology company is going to go bust. There are going to be those that still prosper in even in this kind of environment. One thing that I thought was also really impressive over the last couple of days was the performance of some of the shipping companies. So Ardmore has completed its base formation, and it pulled back exceptionally violently on Monday, and then recouped all of the loss over the last 2 days. So with commodity prices still firm, and with inflationary pressure still high and sticky, and the threat of stagflation, there's going to be pressure to supply commodities around the world. And there are new supply chains being set up because of sanctions on Russia. So that's creating excess demand for shipping. And they're passing on costs because IMO 2020 came in, and there are going to be additional new restrictive regulations imposed on the shipping sector in July and from the beginning of 2023. And that's going to push up the cost of shipping. So that's also inflationary, and they're going to pass that on to customers. So that also means it's going to put upward pressure on commodity prices. And there's not really a lot anybody can do about it because these kinds of agreements take years, if not decades, to negotiate, and they're not going to be avoided anytime soon. So I think with that, I'll leave you for the today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.